My father wasn't quite convinced of my ingenious geopolitical insights. He was a janitor at Amiri Hospital. He'd been on duty the night it had its first major African rabies outbreak. He hadn't personally seen the bodies rise from their slabs or the carnage of panicked patients and security guards, but he'd witnessed enough of the aftermath to convince him that staying in Kuwait was suicidal. He'd made up his mind to leave the same day Israel made their declaration.
That must have been difficult to hear.
It was blasphemy. I tried to make him see reason, to convince him with my adolescent logic. I'd show the images from Al Jazeera, the images coming out of the new West Bank state of Palestine, the celebrations, the demonstrations. Anyone with eyes could see total liberation was at hand. The Israelis had withdrawn from all the occupied territory and were actually preparing to evacuate Al-Quds, what they call Jerusalem. All the factional fighting, the violence between our various resistance organizations, I knew that would die down once we unified for the final blow against the Jews. Couldn't my father see this? Couldn't he understand that in a few years, a few months, we would be returning to our homeland, this time as liberators, not as refugees?
How was your argument resolved?
Resolved. What a pleasant euphemism. It was resolved after the second outbreak, the larger one at Al-Jahra. My father had just quit his job, cleared out our bank account, such as it was. Our bags were packed, our e-tickets confirmed. The TV was blaring in the background, riot police storming the front entrance of a house. You couldn't see what they were shooting at inside. The official report blamed the violence on pro-Western extremists. My father and I were arguing as always. He tried to convince me of what he'd seen at the hospital, that by the time our leaders acknowledged the danger, it would be too late for any of us. I, of course, scoffed at his timid ignorance, at his willingness to abandon the struggle. What else could I expect from a man who'd spent his whole life scrubbing toilets in a country that treated our people only slightly better than its Filipino guest workers? He'd lost his perspective, his self-respect. The Zionists were offering the hollow promise of a better life, and he was jumping at it like a dog with scraps. My father tried, with all the patience he could muster, to make me see that he had no more love for Israel than the most militant Al-Aqsa martyr, but they seemed to be the only country actively preparing for the coming storm, certainly the only one that would so freely shelter and protect our family. I laughed in his face. Then I dropped the bomb. I told him that I'd already found a website for the children of Yassin and was waiting for an email from a recruiter supposedly operating right in Kuwait City. I told my father to go and be the Yahud's whore if he wanted, but the next time we'd meet was when I would be rescuing him from an internment camp. I was quite proud of those words. I thought they sounded very heroic. I glared in his face, stood from the table, and made my final pronouncement. Surely the vilest of beasts in Allah's sight are those who disbelieve. The dinner table suddenly became very silent. My mother looked down. My sisters looked at each other. All you could hear was the TV, the frantic words of the on-site reporter telling everyone to remain calm. My father was not a large man. By that time, I think I was even bigger than him. He was also not an angry man. I don't think he ever raised his voice. I saw something in his eyes, something I didn't recognize. And then, suddenly, he was on me. A lightning whirlwind that threw me up against the wall, slapped me so hard my left ear rang. "You will go!" he shouted as he grabbed my shoulders and repeatedly slammed me against the cheap drywall. "I am your father. You will obey me." His next slap sent my vision flashing white. "You will leave with this family or you will not leave this room alive!"